What would you do to get great hair? I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan, and this is not a commercial. This is the Allegheny Front, your environmental news program, and this week we hear some health complaints about a controversial hair straightening process.
One night wheezing so badly, I was literally gasping for air. So the next day is when I went to the salon, I said, I am not doing this ever again.
Plus, in the heart of some of Pennsylvania's best forest land, a debate over drilling continues. This and gearing up for cycling season. Please stay tuned to the Allegheny Front. Our program begins with a phone call to some true trailblazers again, Joanna Swanson and Bart Houck. They're hiking the entire Great Eastern Trail, an 1,800-mile path connecting existing trails between Alabama and New York. And they say they're in the beginning of the end, the last third of the hike. And speaking of thirds, this is our third visit. Thank you guys for speaking with me.
Yeah, not a problem.
Hey, so where are you right now? What's it like?
Right now, we are almost in Siler, Virginia. It's like most places we've been. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, good. I'm glad we connected. I was a little concerned when it took us a couple times to reach each other because I saw on your blog you had a photo of what you described as a hillbilly zip line. It was like an electrical line hanging off the poles. I hope you didn't try that out.
No, I didn't have the equipment. It looked very tempting.
I know you've done some presentations along the way about how to prepare yourself for this hike. Are you recommending that people have a minimum fitness level of any sort?
Well, me and Joe, we did not have any kind of physical regiment that we partaked in before hiking this trail. Just hiking the trail itself will start making you in shape. We're doing a lot more miles now every day than we did at the beginning. So you just kind of just wean yourself into the trail. And we were doing probably 8 to 10 miles a day in the beginning, and now we're smoking around 17.
I see a couple times now that, according to your blog, the rocks slowed you down a bit in some of the sections. Is that right?
Yeah, it can be a little bit tedious and hard on the feet, especially if you have 30, 35-pound pack. You know, that coming down on your foot and these rocks. And we're just lucky that the rocks were dry. It doesn't make them not slick, but it helps a lot better.
I like to think that along the times that I've been talking to you, I'm traveling vicariously and learning more about you as you go. We've talked before, and I know you are a songwriter to some degree. Has your song come along about the trail at all?
I have a couple, but actually, I was singing one today.
And would you mind sharing that today?
You want me to sing it a cappella then, right?
Yes, I would love that.
All right, I'll do my best.
That's all we ask.
All right, here it goes. I'm walking away from the rain. I'm walking away from the rain. All the troubles in my head, I've put them all to bed as I walk away from the rain. I'm walking to blue skies where the sun shines all day. To the loved ones at home, I'll be all alone. I'm walking away from the rain. Something like that.
Oh, thank you. You just delivered me for a moment from the urban world and put me in the heart of the wilderness. Thanks so much, Bart. Let me check in with Joanna.
Yeah, she's dying to talk to you.
Hi, how's it going?
Life is good. It was an early day at the shelter, so we're just chilling out and enjoying the day.
Tell me, you had several photos of shelters along the way. Tell me about those.
Yeah. So shelters are usually three-sided, and they're usually pretty rustic, except in this section, the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club has gone above and beyond and created some works of art. So tonight, our shelter has 8 chairs that have been made out of logs. It has windows up near the ceiling to let in light. It's got a deck that wraps around most of the shelter. It's got a privy that we can use, so we don't have to dig a cat hole in the woods. And it's got a mailbox for the shelter register, so we can sign in and see who all has been here and tell a little bit about our journey, too. So it's been really nice being in shelter territory.
Any new anecdotes you could share since the last time we talked?
Yeah, the woods has come alive with animals. I think early on in the trip, they had more sense than to be out, a lot more sense than we did. And now we've seen, in one 24-hour period, we saw 5 bears, and we got to watch a mom and 3 cubs play. We got to watch them for about 20 minutes. We were up on a ridge, and so the mom didn't see us and didn't hear us and didn't smell us. And that was really fun to see because I've never been able to watch bears play in the wild before. It's always been trying to get out of their way, not disturb them. But we weren't disturbing them up there, so that was really fun. And Bart got to see his first porcupine in the wild.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, I'm from up north, and so we've got a lot of porcupines up there. It wasn't quite as exciting for me. And we saw a black snake that was in the middle of eating a frog. So that's all within the last 10 days, maybe.
All right, take care.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Since we recorded that conversation, the hikers hit the Pennsylvania state line. They will be in central Pennsylvania, specifically in Woolrich, for an event June 1st, National Trails Day. You can learn more about that and hear previous interviews at AlleghenyFront.org.
Hi, I'm Kara Holsapel, digital editor of the Allegheny Front. And this past week, I asked our Twitter followers what they knew about the topic of our next story, the Brazilian blowout. We got some interesting guesses. A cocktail, something consenting adults do, a phrase from NPR After Dark. Interesting, but not correct. But no worries, we'll give you the answer in a moment. And don't forget, if you're on Twitter, please join our conversations at Allegheny Front. For the answer, back to Jennifer Shveta-Jordan.
And would the real Brazilian blowout please stand up? It is one of the most popular hair defrizzers on the market. But the process for getting stick-straight locks includes a known carcinogen that causes a host of ugly side effects. The Brazilian blowout's manufacturers even settled a multi-million-dollar lawsuit last year related to these health concerns. So why is it still perfectly legal to use? Stephanie Coleman has this story for the Allegheny Front.
Rumor has it, the Brazilian blowout was discovered when an embalmer in Brazil found that the formaldehyde he used on corpses also straightened their hair. This is just hearsay. In any case, the treatment promises to tame even the unruliest of curls, leaving clients with smooth, sleek, manageable hair for up to 12 weeks. It's changing lives. At least that's according to this online ad.
The Brazilian blowout has changed my life and the life of all my clients.
Totally, totally changed my life.
Changed my life.
Changed my life.
Changed my life. And my hair that I live with every day, I love it.
It changed Natalia Jasimov's life too.
Put a little mousse in your hair too.
She works as a hairstylist in Manhattan. In March 2011, she started doing Brazilian blowouts on her clients' hair, as well as her own. The process is simple, she says. You apply the product to damp hair from root to tip, then blow dry it out and flat iron it straight at 450 degrees to seal in the treatment. Jasimov did a lot of Brazilian blowouts, 2 to 3 a day, 3 days a week.
Well, in the very beginning, I really wasn't taking too many precautions because we were told that it was safe. I wore gloves and that was basically it.
A couple weeks in, Jasimov got sick. She had a nasty respiratory infection. She was wheezing and had to take steroids and antibiotics.
And at the time, I didn't equate it to the Brazilian blowout at all because I thought, it's a really bad respiratory infection. Even though I never got sick, I rarely, if ever, got sick.
Jasimov brushed it off and continued to do the treatment. But the fumes would burn her eyes. Her nose wouldn't stop running. That respiratory infection just wouldn't go away.
I kept making excuses because I was like, I love this treatment. I was getting all these clients from doing that treatment. I was making money off the treatment. So I was really very much in denial.
After 4 months, Jasimov finally admitted that it might just be the Brazilian blowout, She went online and researched. Turned out other stylists were blogging and posting about their own health issues.
A lot of these stylists that were doing them had exactly the same symptoms as me. I started getting these blisters in my nose that would scab over, and they just never went away. I thought, there's no way. I couldn't explain that one away. The last straw was when I went to bed one night wheezing so badly, I was literally gasping for air. I thought I was actually going to have to call 911 or something because I didn't think I was going to make it through the night. So the next day is when I went into the salon. I said, I am not doing this ever again.
Dr. Belzito.
Dr. Donald Belzito is a dermatology professor at Columbia University. He's also part of the expert panel for the cosmetic ingredient review.
We review the individual ingredients to determine at the levels that are used in various products whether they can be safely used.
In hair straightening treatments like Brazilian blowout, the primary ingredient is water. The second ingredient is methylene glycol, which is the key to smoothing the hair. Methylene glycol is formed when water reacts with formaldehyde. You're probably familiar with formaldehyde. It's a chemical compound used to preserve bodies. It's also used in paints, textiles, and other industrial products. And it's a known carcinogen. Now, the problem with methylene glycol is that it can easily break down back into formaldehyde in water under the right conditions. Inside the Brazilian blowout bottle, there's a delicate balance.
The best way to say it is if you had a teeter-totter and you had two people who were the same weight and you lifted up your feet and they were in the same position on the teeter-totter, it would just stay even.
Methylene glycol sits on one side, formaldehyde in water on the other.
When you heat them, which is what you have to do to get the hair to become straight, then you force that balance towards formaldehyde, and you force it towards formaldehyde gas at the temperatures that are used. So therein lies the problem.
When you heat methylene glycol to 450 degrees with a flat iron, it converts into water and formaldehyde. These are both gases at that temperature, so they enter the salon's atmosphere. For a client getting a single treatment, any side effects from breathing that in will disappear once they step outside and into fresh, open air.
But the real issue, I think, is the cosmetologist who's working in a salon where these levels are elevated, you know, 8 or 10 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. And under those circumstances, then there can be real harm.
Like cancer. Studies have shown a link between formaldehyde and cancer of the nose and upper airways. Because of these dangers, government organizations like the FDA and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration have been investigating this issue.
Brazilian blowout and other treatments containing methylene glycol / formaldehyde really came out of left field in terms of regulatory agents. You know, we weren't aware of them. It was only as a result of consumer complaints brought to the FDA, to Health Canada, that, you know, we became aware exactly what was going on and the need to regulate it.
We require that any chemical that has 0.1% of formaldehyde in that product, they have to label it as having formaldehyde.
KG is the area director for OSHA in Manhattan. She says companies weren't just leaving out formaldehyde from their product lists, they were advertising their products as formaldehyde-free. Now that OSHA knows about this, they're stepping in. G says OSHA can't stop salons from using these products, but they can demand that employees are protected.
There's always some more that people can do or more that manufacturers and companies can do to protect employees. Employers need to be more proactive in that when they get a product, they need to look at the product, make sure that they give their employees adequate training and protection against the product. If they can change the product, use a different product that doesn't have that chemical, that would be even better.
But with almost 5,000 hair salons listed in Manhattan alone, it's impossible to monitor all of them. Natalia Jasimov found her own solution. She still works at the same salon where she used to do Brazilian blowouts, but she doesn't do them herself. In fact, she works her schedule around when they're happening so she can be out of the building.
I mean, the impact is worse than anything I could have ever imagined. It wasn't just the health problems. Really, I mean, I worked so hard to get a cosmetology license late in life, but the way things are now, you know, I'm scared I'm gonna have to quit the career because I can't even be around this product at all. And if every salon in Manhattan or most salons in Manhattan do something like this, there's no escaping it. You know, and most of them do still do these products.
While a ban is unlikely, organizations like OSHA and the FDA are doing outreach to hair salon groups, issuing health alerts, and ramping up inspections. Their hope is that problems with treatments like Brazilian blowout will blow over soon enough. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Stephanie Coleman.
Manhattan isn't the only place where women are lining up for the Brazilian blowout. We checked in with a Pittsburgh-based organization, Women for a Healthy Environment, when it leads workshops around the state. The group tells listeners that the Brazilian blowout is a kind of poster child for poor regulations. But Women for a Healthy Environment's Michelle Nakarati-Chapkis says that many other health and beauty products are also suspect.
Things used in the salon to everyday products like soap, deodorant, and shampoo, the laws that guide all of those were written actually in 1938. And so only approximately 11% of those have been tested for safety.
Legislation that would change this, the Safe Cosmetics and Personal Care Products Act, was reintroduced this year. It has, however, failed in Congress several times before and is not expected to get anywhere this session. A link to a database with information about thousands of cosmetic products is at AlleghenyFront.org.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from Table Magazine, sharing food, culture, and lifestyle in Western Pennsylvania. The summer issue includes 20 things to do this summer and the science behind our constant cravings. Table Magazine's summer issue is on newsstands now. More information is available at tablemagazine.com.
On to a natural gas story that we've been following. About two-thirds of Pennsylvania state forests sit atop Marcellus Shale natural gas deposits. The state has leased some of that land to drillers, but there's a moratorium on new leases. Energy companies, however, actually own the mineral rights to parts of one of the state's most pristine, intact forests. And plans to open up those new forest areas for drilling have pitted anxious forest lovers against would-be drillers and state regulators. From the Loyal Sauk State Forest, State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports.
Dick Martin is a retired high school science teacher and volunteer with the Pennsylvania Forest Coalition.
It's just one of the most beautiful spots in Pennsylvania.
Martin is gazing at a waterfall called Rock Run in the Loyal Sauk State Forest. The forest is about 120 miles north of Harrisburg and stretches across more than 100,000 acres. People don't live here. But black bear, wild turkey, bobcats, native brook trout, and rare and endangered birds, such as the black-throated blue warbler, do call this place home. Martin and his friends are driving me to some of their favorite spots in these woods.
They're going to be coming in right up here and cutting a new road in.
You see that's the, Steve Zoak. He's with the Loyal Sauk Creek Watershed Association. Right, Zoak is an avid fly fisherman and hunter. But these days, he and his pal Dick Martin have been doing more than hiking and fishing. They've been tracking down surveyor's tape and flags deep in the forest where no cell phone towers reach.
Look back through there, you can see the pink, the red, white, and blue. The pink lines going through like that were the original survey of the...
At the wheel of the van right is Mark Schiebist, an environmental attorney with Penn Future.
Road closed. Do you think we can do it?
Yeah. Yeah, once you get there where your front tires start to go up, okay, then go.
Safely across the stream, we head down more rugged roads.
There's a little pink ribbon there, but I don't see it going any further.
There's some along the creek, too. We think they might be trying to put a crossing in here.
The colored flags littering this untouched forest all mark future pieces of natural gas infrastructure. Roads, pipelines, well pads. We jump out of the van to get a closer look.
There you can see on that particular post right there, it says Anadarko Petroleum Right-of-Way, Pad 1, Prelim. Okay.
Anadarko owns the natural gas lying beneath about 25,000 acres in the Loyal Sauk State Forest. And that acreage includes beloved wilderness trails like the Old Logger's Path, used for primitive camping.
Sorry that it's foggy.
The gas company has been negotiating with state forest regulators to get access to drill here. Back in the van, we take a trip to another area of the Loyal Sauk State Forest.
We went up that red road there, See the little
should
tree.
Be up here on the left.
Might be just
following a map of the forest, hunting for a scenic overlook, we come upon a surprise.
Where's the overlook? What the hell?
Oh, a pad. We got a real pad here. Now there, look at the four wells. See the right one?
The scenic overlook has been flattened to make way for a well site. Trees are gone, and in their place, a slick black tarp covers the ground. Bulldozers are clearing land for a pipeline. Drilling in the state forests is not new. It's been going on since 1947. But the Marcellus shale boom means a bigger footprint, more and larger well pads, wider pipeline right-of-ways.
I just asked that guy. I said, isn't there an overlook up here? And he said, yes.
Well, he wasn't lying. I mean, you drive around left and look.
Yeah, but
sure is pretty. Drive left.
Well,
this is exactly what these men fear will happen back in the untouched, pristine areas of the Loyal Sock. The attorney, Mark Schiebest, can't believe what he sees.
It's really ugly. Look at this. I mean, what's the clearing here? Good.
The clearing is well pad E in DCNR Tract 100. Every well has a name. Here on this mountain, the state does own the mineral rights, and former Governor Ed Rendell chose to lease the gas to Seneca Resources several years ago. Fast forward a few months later, and I'm in another car, this time with a couple of company employees, and we're heading toward one of their well pads in the forest.
And now we're in Lycoming County, and we're looking at DCNR Track 100.
That's Rob Boulware, a spokesman for Seneca Resources.
How you doing? Have it made, just be careful.
Going up to N.
You're good to go.
Great,
just
thank you.
Just be careful.
Yes, sir.
At night, bright lights are shining on this bustling industrial operation in the middle of the forest.
We don't have the advantage of daylight to see what it looks like, but it's certainly a beautiful vista, and we'll do the best that we can to bring it back in conjunction with our work with the DCNR to reduce this footprint.
Boulware says that drilling on public lands actually gets more scrutiny than the wells on private land. That's because forest regulators have their own set of drilling policies.
So depending on whether you're running four wells or six wells or 10 wells, that small unit that you see protruding from the ground is what you're going to have left.
Because these Loyal Sock wells are the company's most productive. So the state is benefiting by getting some fat royalty checks. But the more virgin forest tracts, still untouched by drilling, are not such a great deal for the state. Remember, the gas company owns those mineral rights. So there will be no royalty checks from Anadarko Petroleum. And to make matters worse, state regulators say past court rulings have left them with limited control over parts of the forest surface. In those areas, the state says the gas company holds the upper hand. This helps explain the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources' cautious approach, which angers forest lovers and environmentalists who want to know more about Anadarko's plans. But the state is afraid. Limit Anadarko's access, DCNR says, and the company might sue. DCNR spokeswoman Chris Novak.
If we should reach a point where we're required to provide access, it really makes sense to look at what are the most valuable resources ecologically, recreationally, because there's 200 miles of hiking trails on the Loyal Sock. And that's our job. That's what we do. We try to balance those different uses and values of the forest.
Novak says Anadarko offered the state $15 million for access to drill. The department made a counteroffer of $22 million. So far, no agreement has been reached. Back in the more pristine part of the forest, near Rock Run Waterfall, Dick Martin of the Pennsylvania Forest Coalition agrees with Novak. But he worries the state is not driving a hard enough bargain.
Let's do some creative horse trading. Let's try to swap some rights here where DCNR can protect the most special places. There are special plants. There are rare, threatened, and endangered birds up here.
This is why people like Martin are pushing for a seat at the table with Anadarko and state officials. DCNR has responded to pressure and says a public meeting will be scheduled for June. In the Loyal Sock State Forest, I'm Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
You're listening to the Allegheny Front. Please go to our website for more of our coverage on the Loyal Sock controversy. AlleghenyFront.org.
For more information about State Impact, Pennsylvania, visit AlleghenyFront.org for a link. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among WITF, NPR, and WHYY in Philadelphia to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.
Now from drilling in the forest to biking in the city. National Bike to Work Day took place earlier this month. I boarded my bike and joined in the fun and recorded some riders around Pittsburgh who stopped at stations with food and drink that the advocacy group Bike Pittsburgh set up along the Monongahela River. Here's what the cyclists had to say.
Hi, I'm Jack Hughes. I rode out the Sandcastle today.
Are you biking to work or you were just biking?
Well, I'm 71, so I'm biking to work. I'm going over to help my son paint his new house today and watch the kids. So, yeah, that's work. But I needed to get a ride in the morning. I love to ride bikes. I did 20 miles yesterday. I just love the trails in Pittsburgh. It's exciting. And I had to get 10 or 12 miles in before I went to work. So that's my day.
I'm Gwendolyn Schmidt. I live about 3 blocks from here in the Southside Flats. I bike to work as much as I possibly can. It's something I grew up with. My dad biked to work all of his life. My husband bikes everywhere. All the time. My husband's braver than I am. He does snow and ice. I don't do snow and ice. I don't even do heavy rainstorms.
but you do dresses and toe shoes.
Well, right now I have, these are not that high.
No, it just said peep toe. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I work downtown. So bike downtown, go to work, and then bike up to the after hours party. I do that a lot, actually. We get comments sometimes because we're always dressed up on bikes because we'd rather use a bike than our car.
I'm Ryan McDermott, and I'm a professor of English at the University of Pittsburgh. And I just last week moved with the goal of having a 95% on-trail commute.
Cool. And how's it going so far?
Well, I got a flat tire yesterday, so I had to get a new wheel and everything. But it's going great. It's really beautiful. There's a bald eagle on the way. And a little chick. So
have you seen the chick?
No.
I guess it'd be pretty small.
Right. Apparently you just see evidence of the chick by the behavior of the parents.
Name is Russell Duff, and I'm just out for a ride this morning, right into town and just riding back. Just wanted to be out today for the bike to work day.
But you're not going to work?
No, I'm actually working from home. So I rode my bike to work, but then I'm riding myself back home right now.
Trooper.
Yes. I've been biking since about 5 years old, done BMX freestyle, and I just can't stay off a bike. It's like my stress reliever.
Thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride.
Bike to Work Day marked the first of what are known as car-free Fridays. People here in Pittsburgh and other cities are encouraged to give up the car once a week. There's also a national bicycling challenge taking place, offering a chance for prizes to folks who log their miles online. For more information, go to AlleghenyFront.org. Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. Kathy Naur is the executive producer. Janelle Pfeiffer is our production director. Kara Holsoppel is our digital editor. Please visit our website, where you can now make donations to support our programming at AlleghenyFront.org. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments and the A.D. and J.W. Wilson Fund of the Pittsburgh Foundation.